And I just learned the best spell of all.
What's that?
Sleep.
Welcome back to My Alchemical Bromance. I'm Eric Arneson, and in this episode, I'm joined by Ryan Butler, medieval astrologer, cat owner, podcaster, and alphabetical occultist. We're going to talk about astrology, astrological and planetary magic, the Picatrix, which I feel is becoming kind of a theme, and other awesome astrology stuff. Ryan is brilliant. This is a great conversation. You're going to be glad you're here. Okay, now I'm going to remind you again, maybe at the beginning of every episode, that we are listener supported. So through Arnomancy Patreon, for just $1 a month, you get early access to episodes, you get bonus content, and that's all at patreon.com/arnomancy. All right, now on to the interview. All right, again, so I recorded this one on a Saturday, and I didn't know that construction workers worked so much on Saturdays, so once again, there's construction noise. I promise it'll all be over. Probably sometime within the next 30 to 150 episodes, there will no longer be construction noise in the background of my interviews. Enjoy the episode. Okay, so Ryan Butler.
That's me.
I guess the first question I would like to ask you is, how did you get into astrology?
So I really hate getting this question, because most people, usually this question comes up like at dinner at astrology conferences, and everybody's just kind of talking like, oh, you know, how'd you get into astrology? And most people have like really kind of serious, like pivotal moments in their life where they're introduced to astrology that explains something about what's been going on with them. Like people have had like chronic illnesses, and then they discover astrology, and like as they get deeper into it, they realize that the astrology timing kind of matches up with how their illness, you know, was diagnosed or when the symptoms first started. Or like people go through other kinds of personal crises that they are able to explore and kind of explain to themselves with astrology. And so on the one hand, it gives them, you know, meaning to their lives. And then it at the same time verifies astrology for them. Like they see it really closely up front, like in a really personable way. For me, I first got into astrology because in the 11th grade, we had to do a research paper on a topic. Like we just had to pick a topic and do a research paper on it. And the teacher gave us a list of like topics that we could choose as far as like prompts, but we had the ability to pick kind of anything as long as the teacher got approval of it. But astrology was one of the things on the list that she just kind of threw out there. Whether or not she actually meant like astronomy, I do not know. But but I picked that one, and I don't really know why I picked it specifically. It didn't pull me very strongly. Knowing me, it was probably because it's an A word and it was at the top of the list. That's my guess. Knowing myself in the 11th grade, that was probably why I picked it. I didn't want to read too far down, because like abortion was probably taken, AB, you know, and so astrology was probably next. And I was like, that one sounds fine. I'll do that. So that's how I got started kind of going into it more. And then I went to the local library, which is still a thing that we did back in 2005. And I found Astrology for Dummies. Like they had like a literal, you know, the For Dummies series about astrology. And I found that, and it kind of went all the way down from there, that I just picked up this subject, had to do like a report on it, talking about it and explaining it and, you know, going into like the history of it and stuff like that. And then now here I am.
But the here that you're at now isn't sort of like typical modern astrology, because you've really kind of embraced sort of an older paradigm, right? So, So you don't write a sun sign column for the local newspaper or anything. You do like real astrology.
I do my best to do real astrology.
How did that happen? Like what changed your mind? Did something disillusion you about modern astrology, or did you just get all nerdy one day and get like the oldest book you could find and be like, oh, this is different?
This is different. No, So one of my cats likes to get in the drawers and he's scratching at it. This is the other aspect of my life. I'm just ruled by cats and mm-hmm. their whims. So prepare yourself for that.
Is that Leo? That's like you've got Leo in your ascendant or something. And
I have cats in my every house.
Cats in every house.
In every house. But yeah, so that I did start off with, you know, the modern kind of astrology, but I was aware of like this older mm-hmm. part of it in the background because of this report that I had to do where I talked about the history of astrology. So I knew, you know, even from a very early getting started, I knew, you know, astrology originated in Babylon and, you know, in Egypt and synthesized together. And then, you know, Greco, Hellenistic astrology happened and all that. I knew all that was there. But the first books that I got were not that, were not about that at all. Mm-hmm. And that switch happened at the time I was active in an astrology forum. Mm-hmm. And I formed a close friendship with one of the other members there. And for Christmas one year, they sent me William Lilly's Christian Astrology.
Oh, really?
And that's what did it. Because that individual was really good at horary. Mm-hmm. And then he was like, I know you can do this. And so he sent me the book, and I have this thing where like when people send me things or like make things for me or get things for me, I do them, whatever it is, just because that's like the thing that you do, I guess. Like appreciate gifts. At least I do. At least like I appreciate gifts. I appreciate the gesture. And even if I don't really like it, I still do it. Mm-hmm. So, you know,
yeah, it's polite.
Look at me, the martyr. So, you know, 17-year-old me, the last thing I wanted to do was read a book from the 1650s and struggle with the language of it. But I did, mm-hmm. because it was a gift at the time. And then I was like, oh, this is great. And that's what kind of started that whole thing.
Well, hold on. Let's go back just a little bit. Explain to the audience who William Lilly was.
Okay. So William Lilly was a English astrologer. He was very, he was a very prominent writer from like from the 1640s until his mm-hmm. death in this, I think the early 1670s. And he kind of really came to fame through the English Civil War. He was primarily a horary astrologer, which is the astrology of asking questions, mm-hmm. casting the chart for the time the question is asked, and using that chart to get insight or information or answers to the question. So a really kind of direct, immediately applicable style of astrology that today is a little bit harder to get, or maybe not to get, sorry, but it's definitely not your entry point mm-hmm. to astrology. So it has a lot more direct and really kind of mundane applications that can be really helpful for people struggling with very specific things. So he wrote a book, well, three books technically, Christian Astrology, and that book was important because it was one of the first astrology books, maybe the first astrology book that was ever written in English, mm-hmm. Because before that they were typically written in Latin, and you know, not everybody could read Latin because you can only do that if you were educated. So his book came out in English, and that was really significant because then as we got closer to the modern era and we lost a lot of texts that were originally written in Arabic and Greek and Latin because we didn't have anybody to translate them, we always had good old Lilly mm-hmm. and his plain old English to get us through.
But at the same time, so like Lilly, I read, I think it was Solomon's Secret Arts, a book that came out a couple years ago. Mm-hmm. I think that was it. There was another book that came out around the same time, and I get it mixed up in my memory now. But it talked a little bit about Lilly and how like that period of time, like right after him, or maybe even during his life, was kind of almost like the birth of modern astrology. Like modern astrology, like astrology started to become really popular. So some of the astrological forecasting books.
Almanacs became like really big.
Oh yeah, they started selling better than the Bible even.
Shh, don't tell them that. But almanacs, it became like a really big period for almanacs, and that was like a combination of a couple things. You know, we had mm-hmm. the printing press now, we had the like the Printers Guild lost the ability to control what was actually printed and disseminated to the population. Mm-hmm. So there was like a lot of really good, Lilly hit like a really great like the really great time slot in history to get out there. And a lot of people kind of followed his example, or maybe rode his coattails, or, you know, joined up on the wave that he was sort of on the crest of.
Do you think, and then, so he might have been even like the last of the classical astrologers, or he was sort of during that period where astrology became more, I don't know, like watered down for the masses, or changed for mass consumption, do you think?
I mean, there's always kind of been a demand for the watered down or like more popular kinds of astrology. Almanacs are not new. Because even in like, you know, the 1500s before that, you would have almanacs, which would maybe not get so deep in like the astrology itself, but, you know, the writers would use astrology to come up with their lists of like lucky and unlucky days for this or that. So it was kind of there in the background. But I think that somewhere around that time period, the astrology started to probably be talked about a bit more and kind of been pushed into the front, to where it didn't have to necessarily hide behind like lucky and unlucky days, which were kind of like mysteriously chosen for people who maybe, you know, wouldn't know. Kind of like how people feel the same kind of mystique around sun sign horoscopes.
Yeah.
Like, oh yeah, you know, they sound mysterious, but once you figure out how they do them, it's like, oh, okay, yeah, I get it.
And sun sign horoscopes, that's the astrology that almost everybody knows.
Right.
Right. Yeah. And how do they do it? Like, how is it done?
Well, primarily they will use the ones that are written by actual astrologers, not just kind of made up, I should say. They primarily use what's called solar houses. So what they'll do is they'll say, oh, I'm going to write for the sun sign Cancer, whatever. So they'll take Cancer and they'll put it in like the first house position. And they'll just kind of read everything kind of based off of that. So Cancer becomes the first house, Leo becomes the second. And so they'll be like, oh, Cancer this month, you know, Mars retrogrades back into your seventh house, because Capricorn would be the seventh from Cancer, and they'll build that kind of interpretation based on that.
So do you think that behind the scenes of some of the sun sign horoscope stuff, there are sort of real astrologers who have...
Oh, yeah.
Oh, really? Absolutely. Okay.
Absolutely.
So then there's just sort of some sort of disconnect between the presentation of astrology to the public and what astrologers are doing in their... in their private practice or whatever?
I think there's a lot of conflation between, because I made them comment about like real astrologers writing your sun sign horoscopes. And that's a thing that doesn't happen super often, especially in like major publications where most people will consume their horoscopes or, you know, initially run into them. But there are a lot of really great astrologers who, you know, use astrology in constructing their sun sign horoscopes, whether they're weekly, daily, monthly, whatever. But they're usually on their own websites primarily. But there are a few people who do write for publications that are actual astrologers. So it's a little bit of everything.
What do you think is the best like published sun sign horoscope stuff? Like, do you have examples of publications that seem to be doing it right?
Well, I know Annabelle Gatt writes the horoscopes for Broadly, and she's been involved in the astrological community in the past. And I know that she has taken like classes in horary astrology and things like that. So she would be one who I know for sure. Like, I could be like, yes, that person with that publication. The others, I have a hard time pinning down for whom they write. I know Kelly Surtees has also written columns in the past, but I don't know for which publications or whether or not that's still a thing that she's doing, or if that was just kind of like, you know, for a moment of time and she's moved on. So that's my, I guess I need to be more more up on what people are doing.
Yeah. Well, I mean, maybe you don't. So what are your cats' names?
I have many cats. So
okay, top ten cat names.
This one is Khan.
Khan.
This one.
Oh, it's funny. I have a cat named Kubla.
Kubla Khan. That's hot. Kubla Khan.
Yeah.
And he is staring at the space in on the hutch of my desk that he would like to jump into. So there's his face and his ears. Oh, and here's his brother. Come here, Lily. This is his brother Lee.
Oh, that's a cute cat.
Yeah, he's my soulmate.
Well, that's nice. So,
Yeah, and they're just gonna chill with me. Chill with me for a while.
I can see the chair in your background is a cat favorite too.
That's kind of
what my chair looks like.
Well, that was my old computer chair, and then I switched to this mesh one, so they couldn't scratch it. So,
All right. So you started learning astrology. You read William Lilly when you were 17 years old. Yeah, I feel that way about William Lilly now. Like,
well, it was actually kind of funny. It was one of those things that, because it was like I had to read William Lilly. But I was like also reading like Shakespeare in English class. So I kind of was like getting a grip of the language and how it's like constructed. And, Lilly writes not like we speak today. So it was kind of a fun timing, just like the material I was reading for like class and how it was very similar in kind of word style as Lilly. So I had a little bit of help going through it.
That's nice. And then did you kind of start to understand when you're reading Lilly? So hold on. I have a different question, I guess. Nowadays when you're doing astrology, do you still kind of go back to Lilly's stuff, or what sort of material do you tend to focus on now?
Yeah. So I started with Lilly, and I refer to his stuff every now and again, but my kind of primary source for a lot of stuff is Guido Bonatti.
Guido Bonatti.
Yeah.
I don't know. I've never heard of him.
2007, I think, Ben Dykes started translating the complete book of astronomy, which was Bonatti's kind of like grand, like magnum opus on astrology. And it's like, how many volumes is it? It's like 10 volumes.
Whoa.
It's like 1,500 pages, and it covers everything in astrology. And hey, we're not going to have that here. cat fights. And so it just kind of covers everything. Like, the first few books are basics and everything's really well explained. And then he does like horary and elections and mundane astrology and natal astrology. So he just kind of covers everything. And it was a really great kind of one-stop shop to get everything, because another thing that Bonatti is really well known for is citing sources. So he'll be like, Abu Mashar does it this way, and you know, according to Al-Kayet, he does it this way, and Al-Khabisi does it this way, and you know, I like this way better, so we're gonna go do it this way. So he's very good about name dropping other people, which is great if you're me and you want primary sources, because then it's like Abu Mashar is my next stop. Like, that's kind of your next stop going backwards. So Guido Bonatti kind of introduced me to this lineage of other authors that I hadn't heard from up to that point. And so then, you know, the collection started amassing.
And then, so what era was Bonatti? Like, when did he...
Oh, Bonatti was 1200s.
Oh, that's old.
Yeah, pretty old.
And then his primary sources tend to be mostly Arabic, you think?
Yeah, his is... like between 850 and 850 kind of starts us off with like Mashallah, he quotes him a lot. And then I think our latest one is his latest primary source would probably be Al-Khabisi was right after that. Abu Mashar, I think, was Abu Mashar's like 960s. I used to have like a timeline of astrologers drawn out, like when people passed. Kind of like they're estimated when they were born and like when their work came out. I used to have a timeline of that. I don't have it anymore. But yeah, so let me think for a second. I gotta do some Google.
Oh, you're thinking with Google.
Yeah, right now it is. So, okay, Al-Khabisi was kind of later, 960s, I was right. Abu Bashar, yeah, 880s, that's right. Al-Rijal. That's the guy I'm thinking of.
Al-Rijal. Oh, wait. I have seen that name before.
Yeah, he's... I think kind of the big work that we have from him is a work on electional astrology, which is in Ben Dykes's compilation, Choices and Inceptions. So yeah, he's one of the later ones. Later.
Well, before 1200.
Relatively speaking.
Yeah. Okay, so all right, and then so you've mentioned horary, electional, natal, like all of these different types of astrology. They all sort of use the same kind of method of, or they all look at the planets in the same way and the houses in the same way. No, you're making a motion like, with your head.
That was like a yes no. Uh-huh. One of the important things with astrology is that it always means the same thing all the time. It's just the context of what we're looking at changes. So it's like, do they always view the planets in the same way? Yes, but also how we use that changes based on what we're wanting to do is.
Okay.
So that would be my complicated answer to that. And my cattail. It is. Enjoy that.
Yeah, it's
a beautiful cattail.
Come on,
just get up there if you want up there. Here. No, which like hit his head on it. He was like, wait, no. Okay.
Okay, so all right, but like so natal astrology is birth charts. That's like you know, where everything is right when you are born. What's the difference between horary and electional?
Horary astrology is asking a question and having the universe kind of respond to you with a chart and is like, here's your answer.
Oh, so it's just straight old question asking divination.
Yeah, it's more divination based. Straight old asking question divination. I'd argue that astrology in general is pretty divinatory regardless of the way that you're applying it. But it's got much more the feeling of, say, like I Ching or, you know, the tarot. It's got much more of that direct kind of simplified, let's just get to the bottom of this. Yes, no, maybe so, and how do I do it? Feel to it. So horary is ask a question, you get the chart for that question, and then you just kind of deal with it. So you have to, you know, interpret that chart and figure out kind of what you can do with it, or, you know, what the situation is, how you can change it, and what the likely outcome is. And then electional is kind of the backwards version of it, where instead of asking a question to get an answer, you try to find a moment in time which is most auspicious to whatever you're trying to do, to basically make the answer be yes, right? So horary is like, will my business succeed? And you're hoping for a yes answer from the universe at that specific moment in time. But electional astrology is more like, I want my business to succeed. When is the best time to do that, to get the best foundation available within a certain time frame to be as successful as possible?
So when you ask a question of horary astrology, how complete a chart do you have to build before you kind of get an answer for it? Like, because I mean, like, calculating a chart can take a little while, right? You can, especially, well, I mean, now you do it with a computer.
But I was about to say, I was like, that's it.
I'm going to assume with some practice, you type it into your astrology software, it pops up and you're sort of like, ooh, you probably should have asked this an hour ago.
Right, like, oh no.
but like in the old days, a horary reading, you know, you'd have to like consult your ephemeris, and you'd have to, there's a lot of stuff going on. How much of the computation is necessary before you can offer an answer that makes any sense?
I mean, I think that all of it is probably necessary, but it's probably one of those things to where, like, you kind of feel the way it's going to go as you're filling out the chart, right? It's like, oh, I don't know about this, y'all. I don't know. And then you're probably just hoping that, like, Jupiter is actually in the first house this whole time, and you're just, like, waiting to get to that part to see if it's better.
I imagine astrologers in the past probably paid a lot more attention to the sky, so they would probably
they probably had like a good idea of where things were roughly. And I would imagine like the only big question, like the only kind of difficult task for them to do would have been to like calculate the ascendant and then like get the houses. But then they probably know like what degree the zodiac, Saturn, Jupiter, Mars, the sun, they probably have a good idea of that kind of all the time, and they just fill it in. But yeah, it's that pesky ascendant and that moon, those quick things, you gotta nail them down.
Freaking 14 degrees a day.
Chill.
Jeez. And then with electional astrology, this is something that I've been wanting to figure out, like where I could find software that did this. Like, let's say I'm doing some electional astrology, and I'm like, you know, I really want Mars to be in, you know, Aries or something, like whatever. Is there any software out there where you can just sort of put in a search term, like, when will Mars be in Aries? And it'll tell you, like, oh, you know, it'll be March of 2019 or something.
I'm not aware of any program that does it that way specifically. SolarFire might, just because SolarFire, like, if you have a question of does the software in astrology do this, it's probably SolarFire. But I'm not super familiar with the program that does it that way. I just use Janus, and I have little buttons to click that move the chart forward so many increments of time. So I have to go and look for it.
Okay. I should probably write something then.
Yeah, by all means. Knock yourself out.
I've looked at it. There's a lot of, like, free ephemeris databases available, but then, like, writing all the software to take care of it, it's a mess. Yeah, a little bit. Would you consider yourself a professional astrologer?
Yeah, absolutely.
And what kind of questions do you get the most of? Like, or horary, electional?
It kind of shifts with the time, because I notice that sometimes I have, like, a concentration of this kind of work, and then that kind of dies down, and suddenly, like, everybody and their grandma wants this other kind of work, and it's just like, what is happening? Are you all getting together and having a meeting about how to, like, when to do this? So in the past, it was much more horary-based, but for the past year and a half, it's been a lot more electional stuff, and that's fine.
And with electional, I mean, so is it questions of, like, you know, when should we get married, or when do we buy a house, or like, what sort of things do people tend to worry
about?
Some
of it's like, when should I, like, accept this promotion kind of thing, or, like, when should my first day in this kind of office be, or when's the best surgeries when I get a lot. Like, what's the best time to get a surgery so, you know, X, Y, and Z get done, whether it's, like, the surgery is successful or I heal quickly or all of those things, or, you know, something. What's another one? Surgery is my more recent ones. Now that I've had a lot of surgery ones now that I'm thinking about it. That's funny. So I'm trying to play back my last few in my head, and I'm like, surgery. Like, wow, this is a pattern now.
And so that actually, I just thought of something else that I've always thought was really curious about astrology. So astrology used to be used for, like, a diagnosis, and the different signs are attached to, you know, different humors and different parts of the body and different organs. Have you looked at that at all? Have you played with that at all or read about it?
Yeah, absolutely.
Is it something that people still try to use?
Define people.
Human beings with legs?
In general, probably not. But yeah. Some of us crazy ones probably do.
Yeah.
But yeah, no, that's a lot of fun. And that's what a lot of my horrors tend to be about, is not like that specifically, but one of the big things that people worry about is, like, the accuracy of medical testing and, like, false positives or false negatives. Mm-hmm. And so that's one thing that I get pretty often is, like, you know, is this, like, should I get a second opinion about this? Or, you know, like, what is the cause of this? Because sometimes, you know, doctors will think it's one thing and then, oh, actually it's this other thing. So I get things like that a lot. And yeah, that system of correspondence between the zodiac signs and the planets and parts of the body and organs are very helpful in kind of narrowing down what the issue is, or, like, what kind of, like, auxiliary concerns or problems are.
Okay, that's interesting. Did you do a astrological reading about recording this podcast?
No, so we'll just have to see what happens.
Okay. I know that Saturn went direct.
Yeah, everybody's direct now. It's great. Everything's great.
Oh, yeah. Well, I figure, you know.
Just keep going. Everything's great.
All right, so when you're looking back at, like, the history of astrology, you've got sort of you know, more emphasis. So first of all, like, there's more emphasis on stuff that isn't just like the sun sign or your ascendant and stuff like that. You've got like the houses and the different planets and all of their aspects and the angles and all that kind of crap. You also have stuff like, there's two things that I've really wanted to learn more about. First of all, one of them is the fixed stars. Mm-hmm. And the other one is the mansions of the moon.
Okay.
So let's talk about the fixed stars first. Like, what happened to them? How come people don't pay as much attention to the fixed stars anymore? I mean, I know they're still up there. I look at them every night.
Yeah, it's a great question. I think a lot of it is that the fixed stars are not used very heavily in the tradition of astrology. So it's kind of like, well, what do we do with these? They're mentioned every now and again, but they're more like adjectives to a noun. You know what I mean?
Uh-huh.
So okay. They're just like, they're not super important. And well, I shouldn't say they're not super important because they are when they pop up, but they just don't pop up all the time.
Mm-hmm.
For people. And I think okay. So the first problem is they're not used a lot. The second problem is there's a fuck ton of them. So how do we figure out which ones we do and don't want? And mm-hmm. that's a question that people struggle apparently with, making distinctions between what's useful and what isn't.
Okay.
So it's like, well, you know, if I use this fixed star, then why, you know, then do I have to use all of them? And that's a fair question. But
oh, yeah.
So that's the thing that hangs people up about them. The other part is that a lot of the fixed stars have very extreme interpretations surrounding them.
Mm-hmm.
And that can be difficult to weave into what are typically pretty mediocre lives. Well, it's true. I mean,
yeah,
and I say that even about myself. Like, I have a mediocre life, like most of us do. That's what the word means.
Mm-hmm.
And so it's hard to really resonate with, like, you know, oh, he'll be gifted with military honors. And I'm just like, no, I will not. Like, right, under no circumstances will that happen.
Yeah, I mean,
so
that fixed star is in the same place for everybody, so.
Yeah, so it's hard to personalize them in that way. Or when they do, they're just kind of personalized in, like, very extreme ways that people don't want to identify with.
Mm-hmm.
So there's a lot of that. And there's also this current of the fixed stars being used a lot in, like, magical practices.
Mm-hmm.
That modern astrology kind of backed itself away from very quickly. So there's that.
Modern
so those
astrology.
Are the problems. Okay. Those are the problems with the fixed stars. Ryan's top five problems with the fixed stars in astrology.
There's a blog post for you.
Yeah. Yes.
I mean, modern astrology really doesn't enjoy its association with magic. It kind of tries to run away. Okay. And then the mansions of the moon.
Okay. Yeah, that one's kind of an interesting story, I think, because the mansions of the moon never really caught on with, like, natal astrology, like, specifically, especially in the West. In the East, like, in Yodish astrology,
mm-hmm.
they're like the main thing.
Really?
So yeah, a lot of people, there's like, okay, I'm going to talk about things that I only very vaguely understand. So here's your disclaimer about
wait,
this.
Wait, hold on. First, tell people what mansions of the moon are.
Oh, sure. So the mansions of the moon are essentially a kind of lunar zodiac that's special to the moon that divides up the ecliptic based on the average motion of the moon. So there are 28 or 27, 28 mansions of the moon, because the moon goes around the Earth in 28 days.
Mm-hmm.
So every day the moon is in a different mansion, and they're kind of analogous to the zodiac signs of the sun. So they have this little kind of like lunar feel to them. That's why they're called the Mansions of the Moon. And like, each one has a specific meaning or like specific imagery. And it's not uncommon in like Yodish astrology for people who are born with the moon in specific lunar mansions to have like a certain syllable or like a certain sound in their name.
Really?
So yeah, so they'll use a lot of, there's this like this tradition about like having a part of your name kind of reflect the lunar mansion that you're in or were born in.
Huh.
And so, but it's a much more of a prevalent practice, the lunar mansions in general, in like Yodish astrology and Indian styles of astrology than it is in the West. I'm not exactly sure why that is. Probably things like racism and whatnot, because of somewhere around the Renaissance, we started to hate brown people in astrology. And that's a thing that happened. Mm. So yeah.
Yeah, I mean, I guess every list of mansions of the moon that I've seen, the mansions all have Arabic names or names that are obviously descended from Arabic.
Yeah. There's this kind of question about whether or not the Arabic mansions and the Indian mansions developed separately, then came together and then kind of split ways at some point. Because the most obvious problem with that is that the Western mansions, there are 28. But in the Eastern style with the Indian astrology, there's 27. But then the Chinese have a lunar mansion system that also has 28. So that's 2 for 28.
Hmm. Obviously, it's 27 2/3.
That must be it. The golden mean fallacy.
That's interesting. And so, like in a lot of astrological magic, the mansions of the moon are prevalent also, or at least like, you know, like if you look in the Picatrix and such.
Yeah.
I was trying to think, like Agrippa doesn't really say, well, does Agrippa talk about the mansions of the moon? I can't remember.
Honestly, couldn't recall.
Yeah.
He must, because it's, because Francis Barrett talks about them in his The Magus, and he basically copies a lot of
that's true. Pretty much
just for his stuff, so it must be in there somewhere.
I do know that there's this quote in Agrippa where he's like, anytime you're doing any kind of astrological magic, you have to pay attention to what the moon's doing. Everything goes to the moon in the end. So if the moon is badly aspected, or the moon is, you know, combusted, or the moon is doing and it's also interesting in I think it's in one of the Solomonic grimoires, there are these things that talk about, like, these are the days of the moon in which you can do this action.
Yeah. And so that's lunar mansions. Yeah.
Yeah. And it doesn't explicitly call out mansions, but it does mention like specific days.
Yeah. That's, it's funny. One of the books I'm reading right now, The Cunning Man's Handbook, talks about dream interpretation based on the day, like the age of the moon, which is basically the same thing.
Is that a good book?
Yeah. I love it.
I've heard of it a few times. I haven't really looked it up yet.
But the lunar mansions actually come out a lot in electional astrology as sort of like the what would I call this? Electional astrology for dummies, maybe. Uh-huh. Like, you know, if you don't have the skills to calculate entire charts to pick the best time to do something, just, you know, use the lunar mansion. Like, is this a good day for this? Well, let's go and consult our lunar mansion book. Where's the moon? What mansion is she in? What kind of activities is this mansion good for? Let's do those. What activities is this mansion not good for? Let's do those tomorrow. That kind of thing.
Okay.
So there's an undercurrent of them in intellectual astrology, but it's almost like a basic level of it. Mm-hmm. That doesn't really seem to get built into more advanced applications of it. So like you'll have it mentioned in like the beginning of texts where it'll list where all the lunar mansions are and what they're useful for and whatnot. But then as you get into the book and you're starting to read about like specific electional templates, like, well, how do you, like, what things do you need to look for when you're trying to sell your house? The lunar mansion isn't really ever mentioned at all.
Okay.
In that. So it's not like, you know, make sure the moon's applying an aspect to Jupiter while she's in the third lunar mansion.
Mm-hmm.
It's just like we learned about lunar mansions and we're done with that. So it's like one of those weird kind of beginner things or basic things that doesn't ever get, it's not used as a base for the, like, for more advanced techniques. So I don't really, it's kind of a weird thing. And that might be a reason why the lunar mansions kind of got dropped off, because they're just kind of like this almost folklore-y kind of thing, like more entry-level thing, that as you got better at computing placements and, you know, knowing where things were and how to do it, you didn't really need anymore because you could do much more advanced, much more specific kind of things. And whether that implies that Lunar Mansion signification can be overridden by more exact planetary placements or not, I can't say I didn't write those books. So,
do you use the Lunar Mansions very much in your stuff?
Not in Elections, so guilty for that also. But Lunar Mansions are how I got started with astrological magic.
Let's talk about that.
I'm a big fan of Lunar Mansions.
How did you? So what made? How did you make the transition from like learning
from
astrology,
normal astrology to crazy astrology? Well,
yeah, yeah. Let's go crazy. I don't think I had a specific.
I mean, I have like moments where I was like, yes, but I don't remember how I got started with election astrology specifically, or not. Sorry, astrological magic specifically.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, I must have found out about it through like renaissanceastrology.com.
Mm-hmm.
Things like those are things that I can think of. Really?
Did that cat just knock something off?
Yeah, he threw Padawan at me. This is my Padawan. Okay.
Okay.
So, yeah, I just got attacked by my own Padawan, so that's embarrassing. But yeah, so I must have figured out about astrological magic through Renaissance astrology, or, you know, I was a part of that forum for a few years mm-hmm. before I eventually left it. So I'm sure it came up in there somewhere. So I don't know. Somehow I got introduced to the concept, and I went and I got, oh, I'm trying to think what was, because back then you didn't really have a lot of sources you could read. I mean,
you had Agrippa, but like pulling useful stuff out of Agrippa, that's, it's like it's jumping into the deep end.
But I'm not exactly sure how I got going with it, but I know that Renaissance astrology was there in the background, and I started reading stuff about it, and all of like the talismans were described as like, you know, go get yourself a plate of gold and inscribe a scorpion on it, okay, and then take it and wash water over it, and then have somebody who's been stung by a scorpion drink that, and they're fine. And I'm like, okay, do you have any gold I can borrow real quick? So really kind of ornate things that I have no access to, or like the skill set to be able to utilize. Mm-hmm. You know, I don't have the ability to like engrave the image of a man with a sword and shield onto an iron ring. Hard pass. So I didn't really want to, like, I wanted to do it, but I was like, okay, give me something I can do.
Mm-hmm.
Like level one, give me something I can do. So that was a struggle that I had for a long time. And then I had kind of taught myself how to do like horary and electional astrology just from reading the books. But when it came to astrological magic, I was very afraid mm-hmm. to give it a shot. Cause I was like, listen, like these are spirits and shit, and I can't just jump on in and expect everything to be fine like it was for, you know, horary and electional astrology. Cause this is just like a totally different thing.
Mm-hmm.
And the last thing that I want to do is like curse myself, upset some Mars spirit. Like I don't want to do those things. So I was very kind of concerned about that. And I wanted anything to give me peace of mind,
mm-hmm.
structure, you know, a checklist, anything, literally anything. And so one thing that I found was Christopher Warnock, who does the Renaissance Astrology site. He had a Mansions of the Moon mini course
mm-hmm.
on like using astrology and, you know, getting started with astrological magic, specifically with the moon mansions. And that was really good because one, it was pretty cheap, which is great. And it wasn't like super intensive about astrological magic
mm-hmm.
in general. It was like a very specialized thing. You have 28 mansions, learn them, figure out what they can do, and, you know, knock yourself out. So it seemed like a very great entry point to it. And it was really great. And I was surprised at how easy everything was, because mm-hmm. I had like talked up in my head as being this like, oh, that's everything. So, but it was fun, and it was a really great resource. And I recommend it to people who are trying to keep cats from digging in their drawer, like in their desk drawers and things like that, and all kinds of stuff. But no, I really recommend it to people who are trying to get started and feel like they need something to, you know, to show them how it goes. And that's something I've been very focused on, is getting more people who are interested but apprehensive to just take the plunge. Because if I had known that it was going to be so easy and kind of like so intuitive or natural or whatever the word you want to use is to get into it and figure it out and just know how to do it, I would have done it like a year or so ago, because I was literally like petrified to get started for such a long period of time.
Right.
So, and it's one of those things that like I kick myself for. It's like, why are you so worried about this?
So when you make, when you do like a astrological talisman, for instance, using the Mansions of the Moon, are you using gold plates or what do you do?
So another conversation that happened, well, not another conversation, because I never talked about a first conversation. But around the first United Astrology Conference I went to in 2012, I met Austin and Caitlin Kopic. I don't think they were actually married at this time, though, but I can't remember what Caitlin's last name was. So sorry, Caitlin. I guess it doesn't really matter now. But I met them for the first time, and they were much more involved in astrological magic than I was, because I was still petrified. And I had asked them about that, like, you know, well, what do I do if I don't have, you know, diamonds to engrave and things like that? And I think it was Caitlin who said, just use paper. Mm-hmm. Like, paper is fine. Don't worry about it being pretty or, you know, attractive. It's just for you and for whatever purpose you made it for. And don't worry so much about like really expensive ornate material, because the kinds of configurations that happen that you would want to commit that kind of funding to don't come along that often. And if that's the only kind of astrological magic you're going to do, you're not going to do it very much.
Right.
And like that really hit me just the right way, like just the right moment in time that I was like, I'm on it.
Oh, that makes total sense. It's like if you've got, you know, a job interview coming up and you're like, I just need a little bit of mercury in my life.
Yeah, sure.
You don't need to go through the whole process of, you know.
Yeah, finding somebody to, you know, get, you know, hot, like precious mercury stones and, you know, silver and, you know, meld it into the shape of mercury. Yeah, it's like just, you know, wait till sunrise on Wednesday, make sure Mercury's in a good place, and just draw yourself a little Mercury symbol, and there you go, knock yourself out. Right. So that's the thing that I try to pass on to people a lot too, is like, you know, just use paper. Paper's fine. It'll get the job done. And then as you get better at looking for, you know, configurations that you want, or, you know, things that you think you might need in, you know, a year out or whatever, then you can save up, find yourself somebody who's into it, and, you know, you can commission like a legit piece from them, and then you can have it. But it's like one of those, you know, once a year kind of things, right, where we'll have like those really great elections where it's like, get in on this, because this isn't happening again for, you know, another 10 years or something. But that's just like, you know, you need those paper talismans, you need those, you know, candle talismans, you need those kinds of accessible things to get you into it. Like, that's your, those are your push-ups, essentially, in astrological magic. Mm-hmm. Like learning what kind of configurations you can use, learning what kinds of things different spirits like, learning how they can work for you, learning which ones don't like you. Like, you need that, you need that exercise in picking elections and learning how different things come out and knowing how to avoid those in the future. Because the last thing you want is to not be very good at picking elections, and then now you're stuck with this gold ring that you sunk $2,000 in.
Oh, yeah.
That, you know, isn't going to work for you, because you didn't have the experience to know to look out for this thing.
Oh, that makes, all right, that makes good sense. That's good advice, actually, I think.
Yeah. And so that's why, you know, I'm all about trying to get people into it and get people started. And that's why I started doing the planetary magic starter packs on my website, where I like lay it all out and I build like specific herbal things for people to use for specific planets, and kind of teach them how to like get started and what to do. And then it's very basic and kind of very non-descriptive in some ways. So it's like, this is like a very basic thing that you can do. And then you make it yours as it becomes a thing that's like, okay, this is boring and super comfortable. How can I do something better? It's like, well, you know, just do it.
I have an idea for you.
That. Yes.
What if, and maybe this already exists, but what about like a monthly newsletter where every month you send out a thing, you're like, this month there are these great elections that are happening on these days.
Oh, so you don't sign up to my newsletter. I see. That's fine.
Well, I mean, I found your website and I read a ton of stuff.
But no, yeah, my newsletter.
I saw some of those incredible infographics you did. Those were awesome.
Oh, my infographics. But yeah, in my newsletter, I only release them quarterly because I'm not super committed to that newsletter life. But I do have a section in it where I talk, where I list, like, you know, August 23rd is a great time for like this Mansion of the Moon election. Mm-hmm. And I'll like link to my website where I have like a write up about what that mansion can be good for. And then if people are interested, they can, you know, contact me and be like, oh, how do I do this? Or, you know, if they already know how to do this. And a lot of times I'll share elections that I'm interested in, or like that I want to get more visibility for on social media. Mm-hmm. And then Nina Griffin writes the magical elections article or column in the Mountain Astrologer. So that's another
I heard about that
resource to go for if you're, you know, astrologically inclined and you have been interested in the Mountain Astrologer. That's another good reason to grab it. And then like a few other people online will share elections for people to try to utilize. But it's one of those things that I, it was one of those things that I really wanted to get more involved in. Cause like I said, I'm all about trying to get people started, like whatever I have to do to get people to get more astrological mages in astrology, whatever I have to do, I'll do it. And when I was first kind of getting started, I would be a part of different like online groups, like, you know, like secret Facebook groups or whatever. And one thing that annoyed me was that they would always share their elections after the election had already happened.
Yeah.
And they would be like, oh, look at this awesome time that I found. Look at these Venus, you know, oils that I made. And I'm like, there are 1,500 other people in this group.
Why didn't somebody, you tell us ahead of time?
Yeah, like somebody would have gotten in on that. And so I got really annoyed with that. And I remember I was on the phone with Nina talking to her. And I told her about it. And she was like, well, just be the change you want to see in the world, Ryan. And I was like, I'm on it.
Yeah, I'm totally going to sign up for your newsletter. I really enjoy, I do astrological magic also. And I'm not always super astute about noticing when good elections are coming up.
And it's they're easy to miss.
Yeah, but I caught Venus when Venus was exalted earlier this year.
Oh, nice, yeah, nice.
It was good. What I've been using for my astrological magic talismans, especially ones I want to keep around for a little while, is Sculpey.
Sculpey, what's that?
It is an oven bake clay.
Okay.
And it's basically plastic, right? But it's easy to work with. It bakes at a pretty low temperature, so if you're getting, like for me, like I do a lot of talisman based magic that involves a lot more planetary correspondence stuff. So I might, you know, use like herbs and gemstones and that sort of stuff. And you can use Sculpey to
just throw them on top.
Oh yeah, or you could put, you could like embed gems in it, or you can do all sorts of cool stuff. It's pretty fun. It's it's also really fun.
Just, you know, playing with Play-Doh, basically magic Play-Doh.
Yeah, yeah.
All right, that's an interesting idea. I'll have to write that one down and explore that. But yeah, so the old books about it are, you know, they have a very specific clientele in mind.
Oh, they do. Rich people.
Rich people. Like one of my favorite things is in Three Books on Life, Marsilio Ficino writes about how it'd be really great to grind up rubies and precious stones and drink them. And I'm just like, yeah, I bet that's great.
Yeah. Well, people used to like grind up pearls and dissolve it in wine and drink it. And I'm just like, oh, that sounds cheapest wine ever.
So it's just like, Yeah, that'd be great.
Yeah.
You have anything I can do? And I'll just send them to that.
Yeah.
So yeah, they're written for a very specific clientele, and that's not always, that doesn't always translate very well into actionable things.
Yeah.
And that's a big hang up is like, oh great, I now have this information.
Right.
Now what?
But I mean, so there are cheaper alternatives that people can do. Yeah. Like there's a lot of sort of like herbal based astrological magic where you can do things like, you know, make this tea out of a particular root or something. And you have to be careful because a lot of the classical stuff is poisonous.
Yeah, or we have mixed up the names and we're not talking about the same plant anymore.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Stuff like that.
Yeah. Well, that's cool. I'm totally going to check out your newsletter, and I'll put a link to it in the show notes, and I'll tweet about it. I'll make sure everybody knows that I signed up for your newsletter.
That's right, you will.
Yes.
Right. But so, yeah, that's how I kind of got started in it, and that's now my soapbox is getting people started in it. Mm-hmm.
That sounds awesome.
Just because it sounds all scary and like intimidating, but it's really not that bad.
Mm-hmm.
But I remember, so I you know, I'm like, oh man, astrology and magic, that makes sense. Let's do that.
Mm-hmm.
And my first real experiment with it was I had gotten Christopher Warnock's Mansions of the Moon mini course, and you know, I'm reading, I'm like, you know, this is all information. This is great. And at the time, so this is like 2013, or no, this must have been late 2012. But at the time, yes, it was, because I did this in December of that year. So at the time I was trying to get involved in lecturing, like at conferences for astrology. Like this was my dream at the time. And so I was trying to plan on, okay, you know what would be really great? A talisman to get me a spot. That would be fantastic. So I planned it all out, and I picked the mansion that I wanted for it. Well, the mansion that I could get. That's the other key part. You have to use what you can get. Don't get too hard. Like don't get your heart set on one specific thing. You have to use what you can get. And so I was like, I'm going to do this. And I had told a friend of mine about it, and she was like, well, do you think you could do something like that for me to get a better job? Because I hate where I'm at. I was like, yeah, you know, what could go wrong? Okay, first of all, that's the wrong question to ask. Don't ask that question. But so I was like, yeah, sure, you know, why not? Like, I'm there. I'll be doing it anyway, so I might as well just, you know, throw another one up on the board. That's fine. So I made two talismans as my first attempt. I had one for myself to get a speaking slot at the next NCGR conference, which was going to be their one in 2013. And then I did one for my friend to get a job. And so I had already put in my application and all that mess to be a speaker, like sometime before, like probably weeks before. And they're doing like, you know, well, we have to think about it and that whole mess. Like, that's fine. I get it. So I make those talismans, and I'm like, you know, that was fun. Like, I would do that again, but that was fine. And then the next day I got my email that said I'd been chosen to be a speaker.
Mm-hmm.
And I was like, oh, that's kind of a cool coincidence. And then later that same day, my friend posted on Facebook that she had been hired for a different job in the company that she worked for. And I was just like, wait a second.
Dude, you're a wizard.
So that's when I became a wizard. And that's when I was like, wow, there's really something to this. Because like one thing happening, that's neat. But then it was like, wow, like the two things on the same day was really just like, holy fuck, guys, I think I'm magic.
Oh, yeah.
And so that's when, so I went from just being like, oh, this sounds like a really cool thing to do, I should try it, to like, man, there's something to this.
Mm-hmm.
And why isn't everybody doing this? And why haven't I been doing this since I was born?
It's always a good question, isn't it? It's because we live in a material world, Ryan.
That's true. And that's absolutely true. But yeah, so that's my origin story as far as that goes. And now I can't stop.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, I think that the first talisman, like astrological talisman I ever made. It was years ago, and I'm sure I have notes somewhere that describe what I did, but I didn't know, I knew hardly anything about astrological magic. Like I had,
Just enough to be dangerous.
Yeah. I mean, you know, I'd read Golden Dawn. I learned a little bit about how to make talismans out of Agrippa, but I hadn't read enough of Agrippa to read enough about like all of the timing stuff. And in my recollection, it was sort of like, it was just a total dud. Like it fizzled. Nothing happened.
That's the worst.
Yeah. But you know, since then I've had a lot more luck. Like
that's good.
Astrological magic is fun stuff, and it is pretty easy to kind of figure out timing. You just have to make sure, like, there are things that are bad.
Yeah.
Right. Like just don't let Mars or Saturn like stomp on your parade and make sure that the sun's not having a crappy day. Or the moon. The moon. Yeah, don't let the moon have a crappy day.
The moon doesn't need to have a crappy day.
Yeah. Yeah.
But yeah, I mean, that's pretty good.
Yeah.
Those are good first steps to make sure that things don't go wrong.
Yeah. And Agrippa talks a lot about sort of like timing the planets that you're trying to gain favor of in the sky. Like these are the houses you want to go with. And you know, if you make a checklist out of Agrippa's chapters on it, it gets a little complicated.
Yeah, you don't want a checklist per se. You just kind of need to prioritize. And it goes back to those. My philosophy when it comes to myself is different than my philosophy of like the elections that are in like my newsletter or things that I share on social media.
Mm-hmm.
So like for myself, I'm not a risk taker per se, because I do have a lot of pets and I like them.
Mm-hmm.
And the last thing that I need is for something to go wrong and affect my pets.
Right.
That I can't like talk to and be like, are you having a good day today?
Mm-hmm.
You know, don't need pets getting sick with mystery ailments, and me discovering it way too late. Don't need that. So I'm not a risk taker per se, but I do. I'm open to more is what I'll say personally than what I am to what I produce publicly. And for me, a lot of it is kind of accepting the fact that there's a risk factor in every election that you do. There's always going to be a risk factor because nothing is ever going to be perfect.
Right.
And so it's either you don't do it at all, or you just accept the fact that life is dangerous and you just have to live with that. So, but there does come a point in time where it's too dangerous, and where that is can change depending on kind of what's happening.
Right.
But my philosophy has always been just like, this is the good of this election. This is the potential bad. You do you.
That makes sense.
I try not to be like, this is the best election ever, or like, you know, this is an election with no faults. But it's just like, you know, here's this election. It looks really great for these things, but this might be a consequence of that. And if, you know, if that is worth it to you, by all means, no judgment, knock yourself out, because it doesn't always matter to some people. Like sometimes you're just in a bind and you need it, or like you're not very heavily invested in whatever area of life the chart is like, oh, this could stir up problems. Like, you know, it's like, oh, you know, be careful because your boss might not like you with this. And you're like, well, I don't like my boss, so this is fine.
Do you ever look at how an electional chart sort of like interacts with a natal chart? Is that a thing that is of consequence?
Yes and no. It's kind of one of those things that the source texts don't really go very heavily into. There's not like chapters on like make sure that, you know, that this corresponds well with the natal chart. And I feel very strongly that astrological magic is a method that allows us to transcend or correct issues in the birth chart.
Okay.
So in a lot of ways, I feel like it's kind of is a little bit above the birth chart. And I know that that's a thing I can't really say.
It's too late. Sorry, it'll be out there. But hold on. I've got a question then. Do you think that it could be that it wasn't talked about a lot in the past because most people didn't have natal charts?
That is probably a factor into it, absolutely. But even then, there are things. So, you know, I say things like, oh, it's above the natal chart. And I don't mean that as kind of like hard-fisted as it sounds.
Mm-hmm.
It's just that when I am like when I'm doing a consultation for somebody who wants me to help them pick the right time to do a talisman for a specific thing, I don't really take their natal chart into consideration very strongly.
Right.
Because to me, one of the reasons why we're making a talisman, one of the reasons why we're approaching a planetary spirit to like for something is because we're trying to fix it.
Mm-hmm.
And a lot of times that issue is in the natal chart anyway.
Okay.
So it's somebody who's like, man, you know, I want to make a talisman to be better known within my community for the works that I produce. Mm-hmm. And it's like, you probably have a debilitated son or a debilitated 10th house lord. And like, that's probably about as far as my mind goes. So like that issue is in the natal chart, but the reason why we're going magical about it is because we're trying to circumvent or correct it.
Got it. Okay.
So it doesn't matter to me so much where, say, if we're making a sun talisman for this individual who has this problem, I'm not going to worry so much about, oh, does the degree of the sun in this electional chart for the talisman, where does it fall in their natal chart?
Mm-hmm.
That's not a super big concern to me, but I am worried more about, I'm worried more about things like, you know, who rules the ascendant of their natal chart and how does that play into this? Mm-hmm. Or like, who's the omnipotent of the figure in their natal chart and what is it doing? And like, why, like what is happening? So there are some considerations into it, but then I also think that there is opportunity for very specific, very personalized electional charts for talismans to be made that maybe aren't great in general
yeah.
for people. Like they're just not super awesome, but for some person, because of where a planet falls in their, like, because of like configurations in their natal chart, but like for that specific person it might be really fucking awesome.
Mm-hmm.
But for everybody else it's like, why did you do a talisman with Jupiter and Aquarius? Like why did you do that? Like Jupiter's not strong in Aquarius. And it's like, oh, because, you know, they have Mars in Gemini and I got it to trine their Mars, and so Jupiter kind of helps them alleviate Mars issues in their life.
Ah. Okay.
So kind of like things like that.
Right.
But like I said, for most everybody, like Jupiter Aquarius, whoop de fucking do. Like, mm-hmm. what's that going to do for you? but for like that specific person who has this issue, like that might, you know, take a lot of stress off of their chart in some way. So it's there somewhere. And then you have references, especially in the Picatrix, where it's like, where it says that, it's pretty blatant in it, that different planets answer to different people more readily based mm-hmm. on their condition in the natal chart, and that like certain planets based on the offices that they hold within the chart can be like their best friend. And so it's like, oh, you know, you can't do Mars magic very well because Mars is fucked up in your chart, but you know, like Saturn magic is really good for you, or like you'll do really well practicing like Saturn type magics. And so it gives you like this list of allies and enemies, and you have to use your allies and kind of like schmooze up to your enemies before they'll be your friend.
I think I've kind
of... So there's...
Yeah.
So it's like, yeah, you know, it's... Natal considerations are always there. But it's not like, not to the same intensity, I would say, as like more secular electional astrology, where mm-hmm. I am very concerned with, you know, what degree is their Jupiter in, what degree is their Mars in. I have to make sure I don't, you know, use that degree and things like that.
Right. Huh. That's interesting. All right. We've been talking for about an hour, so I think that's a good amount of material. And I'm wondering, if the listeners want to find you online, where should they look?
Well, they can find me on Twitter. I've been more active there lately, and it's just at Ryan Butler. So that's me. My website has a Facebook page. If you want to go and look at that, I tend to post. My thoughts are on Twitter, which is always a little dangerous.
Okay, and your website is Modern Astrology?
Yeah.
And you're not a modern astrologer.
No. My website is medievalastrologyguide.com.
Oh, medieval astrology guide. That's right.
I have a lot of people who think I'm saying medieval astrology guy. Like, no. It's not what it is. So medievalastrologyguide.com. It's my website, and then I'm on Twitter at Ryan Butler.
Facebook.
I have Facebook with Medieval Astrology Guide. And I have an Instagram account, but it's mostly just cat pictures and then like magic pictures. So if you like either of those things or both of those things,
okay,
go check that out. And that's at Medieval Astro Guide, I think.
Medieval Astro Guide. Cool. Well, thanks. This has been really enlightening. I learned a lot of stuff, and I have like a zillion more questions.
Let's do it. Let's
now go. That I know how to find you online.
No, what have I done?
Yeah. Well, I mean, it'd be great to have like a follow-up episode where maybe we'd like talk about some Pictrix stuff and things like that.
Yeah, absolutely.
And wait, hold on a second. We should talk about your podcast.
Oh, yeah. With Nina.
Yeah.
More recently, Nina Griffin, who does Griffin Astrology, she's amazing. And I have picked up doing a bi-monthly? No, that means twice, like every 2 months, doesn't it?
Yeah. Bi-weekly?
A bi-weekly podcast called Starstruck, a podcast on traditional astrology and magic. And, excuse me, that was... So Nina and I had actually done a podcast before in the past together with another astrologer, Wade Caves. We were doing a joint workshop kind of thing. Mm-hmm. So we did a podcast kind of basically advertising that. So we did it for a while, and then the event came and happened, and then Wade had to step away from it. So Nina and I did it for a bit longer, and then Nina had to step away from it for because of personal reasons. And then I didn't want to do it by myself. Mm-hmm. I got lonely. But then more recently, sometime before the more recent United Astrology Conference in May, she reached out to me. She was like, "Hey, do you want to do a podcast again?" And I was like, "Absolutely. Mm-hmm. I would do that." We picked that back up a month or two ago. And we release on the full and new moons.
Okay.
So I have to edit an episode after this.
Oh, yeah. The new moon's tomorrow? Yeah,
tomorrow.
Yep.
We just kind of cover topics about traditional astrology and, you know, traditional astrological magic. And we try to, we have like a few different little segments in it where we do, one of them is like we do like a book review kind of thing. Mm-hmm. And the book reviews are not always nice, which is fun. Mm-hmm. And we, you know, we that's another platform where we talk about elections coming up kind of in the near future for people who want to take advantage of them or, you know, want to get started. We do that there because that's apparently my brand now, which is fine. we try to have like a discussion topic about something happening either kind of currently, which we don't do very much, or just like some kind of topic within traditional astrology, like with about either traditional astrology or magic, like we did an episode on our most recent one that we did is like different talismanic things you can make. Mm-hmm. And so we just try to entertain ourselves a little bit. And I try not to get interrupted by cats as much as possible.
I like the cat interruptions. I think that's a great feature. I listened to your guys' first episode, and I thought it was really good. So I'm looking forward to hearing more.
I enjoy it. I'm looking forward to kind of where else we go with it, and I'm really looking forward to when we start when we bring guests on to argue with about things. But that'll be fun. I'm excited about getting it started again. I'm excited mostly with working with Nina again because she's always really fun.
Yeah.
To get a project going with.
Cool. Well, thank you. Well, thanks for coming on to my podcast, and thanks for answering all of these questions and giving so much awesome information.
I mean, I feel like I didn't actually answer that many questions. I feel like I mostly just rambled on.
That's because the questions were things that were like. They let you ramble. They were rambling enabled questions.
Rambling enabling questions. Oh no.
Yeah. So I'll direct people to your podcast. It's Starstruck. That's called Starstruck. And all of your stuff. And I look forward to talking to you again about more of this stuff.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. Looking forward to it.
That was Ryan Butler, Master Astrologer and Cat Wizard. After we stopped recording, we kept talking, and Ryan was like, I hope you're recording this! So I started recording again. So on the Arnomancy Patreon, there is bonus material where Ryan and I talk about moon magic, eclipse magic, and Wicca. It's about 20 to 30 minutes, and then the construction noise got so bad that I had to stop recording. But it's some pretty good material, and we both were getting pretty comfortable, so it's some very frank and honest conversation. I think you'll enjoy it. All right. My Alchemical Bromance. You can find us online at myalchemicalbromance.com. You can find us on iTunes, Stitcher, all that kind of stuff. Please, if you're a subscriber and you're enjoying the show, give us a rating. You know what? If you don't enjoy the show, give us a rating. We can take it. Remember to support us on Patreon. You'll get bonus content like the extra bits from this episode. It's only $1 a month, and it's on patreon.com/arnomancy. All right, we'll see you next time, and I want you to know that this year's MabCon is coming up. I've got a trip planned to Seattle to visit Matt Anthony, one of my co-hosts, and we're going to drink beer. We're going to go to the second annual Esotericism and Freemasonry Conference, and who knows, maybe we'll get outside and wax philosophical in the woods like we did last time I visited. I'm looking forward to it. I think you should too. Those episodes will probably be out in late October, early November. So make sure to keep tuning in, and we'll see you next time.